Welcome back to Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya. Is that? Yeah. What's the subtitle? Anybody remember from the first lesson? What's the subtitle to the seminar?
Spiritual Masters.
No, that's the first lesson. You did that last night too. What's the subtitle? Celebrating Srila Prabhupada's preeminent position in ISKCON, as well as every follower's foundational relationship with him. Lesson 4, his mission's roots in the Sambandha lessons. That's the first three where we deepen our awareness of our relationship with Prabhupada. We deepened our understanding of Srila Prabhupada's relationship with us as our founder Acharya. Now in the Abhideya phase of our journey, we will explore how each of us can develop that relationship by deepening our commitment to Srila Prabhupada's mission. In this lesson, we'll trace his mission's origin and development in India before it manifested in the West. Harishari Prabhu once told us that Srila Prabhupada said to him, "My desire is to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, everywhere, at once." All at once. That's why it was such a... It was so amazing to be in the Hare Krishna movement when Prabhupada was manifest before our eyes, because it was like, you know, it was, everything was happening all at once. It was transcendentally insane and wonderful at the same time. Okay. Where is Srila Prabhupada in that photo? Raise your hand. Radha Damodar Temple. Taking prasad. Srila Prabhupada, honoring prasad in his rooms at the Radha Damodar Temple. Gazing upon... You can't do this nowadays because they changed it, but who is Prabhupada? What's Prabhupada looking at as he looks out the window? Right, you can't do that anymore. Did you know that? Yeah, if you go to Prabhupada's rooms and you look out that window, what do you see? Yeah, there's a big protective, it's a wall? It's some kind of enclosure.
And they've closed it.
They closed it, so you can't see the samadhi anymore. You have to go inside that structure to see it. So, Prabhupada's looking at Rupa Goswami's Samadhi tomb in Vrindavan, 1972. 10 years before this photo was taken, 1962, Srila Prabhupada sat alone in the same rooms, translating Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, and begging Srila Rupa Goswami for empowerment to execute Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's order to preach Krishna consciousness in the West. He had received the seed of that order during his first meeting with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta 40 years before. His mission's roots, his mission's seed. Notice all these gardening images. So, this is one of my favorite slides. There's Srila Bhakti Siddhanta on a rooftop in Calcutta, 1922. There is Prabhupada's friend, or it could be this one, I'm not sure who was who. But Prabhupada said, "My friend Naren, he dragged me to the..." I didn't want to go. Didn't want to meet him. Just, another sadhu. Prabhupada had seen so many bogus sadhus, so-called sadhus. And this is supposed to be our Abhay Charan. Have you read the Lilamrita? You see these paintings. They were painted by the BBT artists, the same artists that made the pictures for the books after Prabhupada left. Then they continued doing paintings, and when the biography, we called it the biography as we were working on it, came through production, the artists did paintings. So this is Abhay Charan Day. Now, so this is depicting Srila Prabhupada, his friend Narendranath Mulak, and others listening to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta speak on Altadanga Gauriamath rooftop, Calcutta, 1922. This is the first chapter of the Gaudiya Mutt. It was in Calcutta, at the little place called Altadunga Junction. So, does anybody know how, I think I told you, right, how, why Prabhupada went? Why did Prabhupada go? He didn't want to go, why did he go? Anybody know? Because Prabhupada told us that I was the leader of my friends, and all my friends had met this sadhu, and they wanted my opinion. They thought he was great, but they were withholding their opinion until they heard what Abhai thought, right? So Narendra, he said, Prabhupada said, my friend dragged me, I didn't want to go. So they went, and they bowed down, and because that's the custom, you know, to bow down to a sadhu. Prabhupada didn't know if he was real or not, but he bowed down anyway out of culture, respect. And then even before they'd risen from obeisances, does anybody know what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said to the young men?
You are a young and learned person, you should preach the teaching in English.
Yeah. Oh, you're educated young men. Why don't you preach the message of Lord Chaitanya in the English-speaking countries all over the world? They hadn't even finished paying their obeisances. You can see how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was really focused on the mission. This is what he was trying to do. Take his father's vision of a worldwide movement further and actually manifest it. So Prabhupada told us, at that time I was following Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi was my hero. He had passed his examination in the university, and then he refused to show up and collect the diploma because they were boycotting all things British, including British, you know, approved diplomas. So Prabhupada felt obliged to, test the sadhu, challenge him. Well, what did Prabhupada say, do you know?
Britishes are controlling India, so we are still not independent, so independence should be first.
Yes, we're a captive nation. Who's going to listen to us? We're under the boot of the British Raj. First we have to get independence. And then, what did the Thakur reply?
This mission is far more, the bhakti doesn't depend upon whether we are dependent or independent.
That's what?
Krishna bhakti doesn't depend on whether we are dependent or independent.
Krishna consciousness is too urgent, it's too important to wait for a change in politics. It's the original, it's the great need of every living being to revive our relationship with Krishna and get out of this cycle, this horror, this nightmare of birth and death. So Prabhupada was struck with wonder because it was the first time he'd ever heard anybody. Prabhupada said, I was defeated. And Prabhupada was just amazed. So he heard the sadhu speak. And as they were leaving, Naren said, so what did you think of Bhai? Why don't you read, Prabhu? Read that.
While the two young men were still rising and preparing to sit before any preliminary formalities of conversation had begun, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta immediately said to them, you are educated young men, why don't you preach Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message throughout the whole world?
Alright, and then we just said what happened. So, so Naren on the way out said, what did you think? And so, okay, this is a little different. Read that.
Srila Prabhupada, I was from a Vaishnava family, so I could appreciate what he was preaching. Of course, he was preaching to everyone, but he found something in me. I was so much struck with wonder. I could understand, here is the proper person who can give a real religious idea.
So he said to his friend Naren, oh, he's wonderful. I can see that now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message is in good hands. He can give a real religious idea, transcendental, not sectarian or fanatic or shallow. So that was the first meeting, and that was the seed of the mission. And because right when they bowed down, We're bowing down. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that. Why don't you preach all over the world? So Prabhupada said, quote, I accepted him as my spiritual master immediately. Not officially, but in my heart. That was 1922. When did Prabhupada take initiation?
1933.
11 years. So what did Prabhupada mean? Not officially, but in my heart. What had happened in his heart?
Transformation.
Yeah, he actually had a change of heart, right? He immediately, his allegiance went from Gandhi right to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Boom! Just by hearing those transcendental words. Yeah, so that was an amazing, that was a big event. Now, this is 1922. Prabhupada actually felt, oh, I wish I could join the mission. But he was already married. I think he was married in 1918. He already had a son. He had five children. They had, the first son was already born. He was working as a office manager in for Dr. Kartik Chandra Bose's Bengal Chemical. So he couldn't run away and join the mission, he said later. It would have been an injustice. Let's see. Yeah. So what he did was, he just went back to his, you know, family and his work, but he didn't forget what happened. He thought he knew his life had been changed. So in 1923, Srila Prabhupada left his office manager job in Calcutta and moved his family to Allahabad, Prayag, to start his own business, Prayag Pharmacy. Prabhupada was so good, he was such a good pharmaceutical salesman, that he decided to start his own business. So he moved with his family to Prayag, and the seed of Prabhupada's mission went with him. This is from the Lilamrita, quote, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was often traveling, and Abhay was busy with his family and business. So to arrange another meeting was not possible, yet from their first encounter, Abhay considered Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati his spiritual master. And Abhay began thinking of him always. I have met such a nice, saintly person. Whenever possible, Abhay would seek out Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples, the members of the Gaudiya Mutt, and they would also seek out Abhay. So what happened was, in 1928, a few years later, it was Kumbh Mela, and everybody was coming, you know, for the big transcendental event at the Ganga, at the Triveni, Prayag, Saraswati, Ganges. And then into Prabhupada's pharmacy walked two or three Gaudiya Mutt sannyasis, because they wanted to start a branch of the Gaudiya Mutt in Allahabad. So they said, Abhay Babu, we hear you're a very nice Vaishnav, and we also hear you're a good organizer, and you have a lot of contacts. Please help us start the Gaudiya Mutt branch in Allahabad. So Prabhupada immediately said, yes, I know these people, and I know their spiritual master, and I must help them. Because he thought of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta as his spiritual guide now too. So he did. He helped them. He helped them. Didn't happen right away, but he started organizing. He started bringing those sadhus to prominent people in Allahabad, because Prabhupada knew a lot of people there from his business. And in 1932, that's the next thing that you hear Prabhupada tell us about what happened. He said he must have been getting more involved now with the Gaudiya mission, because he took time off from his business a day or two. He just snuck away for a day or two. And he went in Kartik season 1932 on Brajmandal Parikram. He snuck away for a day or two. And he caught up with the party being led by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in a town called Kosi. Kosi or Koshi? I'm not sure. Kosi? Koshi. Okay. I think it's on the northwest side of Brajmandal. And that night, His Holiness Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj said, or that day, Sridhar Maharaj said, "So Guru Maharaj says that this is the last night he'll be with the party, and he's going to speak for the last time. So he's giving us a choice. We can either stay and hear him speak, or we can go to this nearby Sheshashayi Vishnu temple, a big spectacular Vishnu deity, Sheshashayi." So Prabhupada said, most of the people went to see the deity. They went, but I thought, what will I see at this Sheshashayi? Let me hear Guru Maharaj speak. Because that's why he'd come to see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So he stayed, and he said only a handful of people were there. Some leading sannyasis, and I was there. I was a householder, a businessman. And sometimes I could follow, and sometimes I couldn't follow what he said, but I loved to hear him speak. So it was that desire to hear Srila Bhaktisiddhanta speak that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta noticed. So the next year, 1933, when Bhaktisiddhanta returned he went to Allahabad, actually, to launch the center that Prabhupada helped organize, someone recommended Abhay Babu for initiation. And so Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he agreed he would initiate him. So, Maharaji Manchuri.
With folded palms, Abhay looked up humbly at his spiritual master. He and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta were now face to face, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta recognized him and was visibly pleased to see him. He already knew him. "Yes," he said, exchanging looks with Abhay. "He likes to hear. He does not go away. I have marked him. I will accept him as my disciple."
He likes to hear. And Prabhupada would say, because I was serious about hearing, now I'm serious about speaking. So that was 1933. That was another very important year. Now 2 years later, in 1935, we're getting close actually to the end of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's life. He passed away, you see it sometimes as the last day of 1936. Sometimes you see it as the first day of 1937, because he actually passed away at 5:30 a.m. And the Vaishnavas reckon the solar day by the sunrise. So by the clock it was past midnight, but by the sun hadn't risen yet because it was January. And anyway, so 1935, you know, it's the last couple of years of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's life. And it turns out to be a hugely important year in Srila Prabhupada's life because he received three amazing blessings. Two of them were very sweet, and one was very heavy. So we're going to look at those blessings now. All right, his creeper blessed. Now, you see this little icon, this indicates we're going to hear Prabhupada say something. This image relates to the last grave blessing, that's why you see this look of concern on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's face. But we're going to do the sweet ones first. The blessings happen in February, in July, and in November. That's the November image. So in February 1935, it was the occasion of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's Vyasa Puja. His appearance day is always in February. "Please, please, come in, come in. Better late than never." "We're so glad you came." Kamala Lochan Prabhu said I should speak with you and Bhagavati Maharaji about scheduling the seminar in January, so we'll have to talk about that at Mira Road. So we're talking about three amazing blessings that Prabhupada received in the year 1935 from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So yeah, the first blessing was around the occasion of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's Vyasa Puja. And by 1935, Prabhupada actually had left Prayag. Because what happened was, he was doing a lot of business, but then the people that were buying his pharmaceuticals in bulk, they weren't paying their bills. So because they weren't paying their bills, Prabhupada couldn't pay his bills. So the only way for him to get out from under that debt was for the person whom he owed money to, which was actually his old boss, Kartik Chandra Bose, was supplying him pharmaceutical supplies, getting them from him, and then Prabhupada was turning around and selling them wholesale, retail. And so Kartik Chandra Bose came to Prayag to look at the accounts. He knew his former employer, you know, employee Abhai. He was a family friend. Was honest, but he wanted to see, you know, why he wanted to see it on paper why Abhai wasn't paying the bills. And he saw it was because Abhai was, you know, he had too many creditors or debtors. And so Kartik Bose said, "Well, look, here's what I'll do. I'll wipe the debt clean if you let me take over the business, and I'll take care of these debtors. You know, I'll chase them down." So Prabhupada did. He just handed the business over. But he didn't have a business anymore. But he had a plan. He and a brother went to Bombay. They came here. They came to Bombay to try to start some pharmaceutical manufacturing and selling in Bombay. And who do they meet in Bombay? But Bhakti Saranga Maharaj and Sridhar Maharaj. And they're trying to start something in Bombay. So just as those sadhus, Gaudiya Math sadhus, had approached him in Allahabad to start the Allahabad Gaudiya Math, so when Prabhupada met those other sadhus in Bombay, they said, "Oh, please help us start a Gaudiya Math in Bombay." So Prabhupada did. He was trying to start a business, you know. He left his family in Prayag with a very small manufacturing works, production works, just enough to let the, keep some income coming in so the family can pay the bills. But he went to Mumbai to seek his fortune, because remember, it was predicted that he would become very rich. So he was trying to do that. He was trying to, you know, if that was his destiny, then he wanted to fulfill it. And then later on with his wealth, he would, you know, do the mission when the family was, when the Grihastha Ashram was done. So, he met Bhakti Saranga and Sridhar Maharajas, and he helped them start in 1934, I believe, the Bombay branch of the Gaudiya Math. And then in 1935, they had the launch, right around the occasion of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's Vyasa Puja. And Bhakti Saranga Maharaj asked Abhai Charanaravinda, now he was initiated, he went from Abhai Charande to Abhai Charanaravinda Das, one who was fearless at the lotus feet of Krishna. He asked Abhai to give the Vyas Puja address for the members of the Gaudiya, Bombay Gaudiya Math. And this used to be printed in every BBT Vyasa Puja book. I don't know if you've ever seen this. It's called The Universal Teacher. You ever seen this? In the BBT Vyasa Puja book, not every year, but some years, they still print it. It's the address that Prabhupada gave glorifying his Guru Maharaj in 1935 in Bombay. And he gave it in English because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wanted his educated disciples, his leading disciples, to preach in English because that was the rising star of languages in the world. So Prabhupada did, and it was great. It was, "Gentlemen, our spiritual master is not the spiritual master of some small sectarian concern. Rather, he's a Jagat Guru. He's a universal teacher." And he was glorifying Srila Bhaktisiddhanta like that, as being a real guru among gurus. By then, founder Acharya, that was in the Harmonist. So that pleased Srila Bhaktisiddhanta when he heard about the speech in English. But he was even more pleased when he read the poem that his disciple had written. "Adore, adore ye that holy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May, when he appeared at Puri, that holy place, my Lord and Master, his divine grace. O my master, thou evangelic angel, give us thy light, light up thy candle. You know, what is it? Save us a fallen, the human race, the only hope is divine grace. It goes on and on. Now here, we're going to hear Prabhupada reading the stanza that most pleased Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. I was so happy when I ran across this recording. This is Prabhupada reading the stanza and the poem that most pleased Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So here we go. Okay, what does sentient mean? And you know what sentient? What does that stanza mean? Absolute is sentient. If something is sentient, what is it?
Like conscious.
It's conscious. It's capable of perceptions. It can hear. It can speak. It's capable of feelings. Krishna is full of rasa, feeling, you know, relationship. Absolute is sentient. God's a person. Absolute is sentient. Thou hast proved, Prabhupada is praising Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, impersonal calamity, thou hast moved. Now, that was 1935. 34 years later, in 1969, when his disciples, his householder disciples, Guru Das and Jamuna and Shamsundar and Malati and Mukunda, Adhikari at the time, and Janaki, his wife, were in London launching the British Yatra in 69. Gurudas, in the British Museum, finds a copy of this poem, this many, multi-stanzaed poem, and brings it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's amazed. He thought, oh, this is the Vyas Puja poem I wrote in 1935. I thought this was lost. But there were some harmonists in the British Museum, you know. And Gurudas found it and copied it and brought it to Prabhupada. Now Prabhupada read the poem and he made a change. Prabhupada is the origin of book changes, editorial book changes. He's the original editor. So, and the change he made was right in this stanza. So see if you can guess the word that Prabhupada changed. This is the old version. Now, Prabhupada changed one of these words to another word. Does anybody know what it is?
He
didn't change. That's old English. That's Victorian English. Thou hast these and thous, you know. Thou, that's old too. Thou hast, it's Elizabethan, you know, these and thous. That's biblical English. Thou hast, that means that's hast is old for have. But no, he didn't change that. Because he did change a word, this is a hint now, that it's kind of, you kind of wonder what it means. He changed the last word, moved. Because what does he mean by moved? What's a better word?
Proved.
No, he's already said proved. Absolute ascension, thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity, thou hast...
Kick.
It's like moved. It's not... What does he mean? What does he mean to say? What did he mean to say? Which he didn't say then, but he...
Kick.
Removed. Removed. You've gotten rid of it. Impersonal calamity thou hast removed. 34 years on, in 1969, Prabhupada's English had gotten better, and he picked a better word. Thou hast removed. So when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta read that poem, he would show it to people. He would keep it and show it. Just see how my disciple has captured my mind, my heart. He knows my mission. And immediately, he told this to the editor of The Harmonist. Read that, Prabhu.
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta instructed the editor of The Harmonist, whatever he writes, publish it.
Whew, there's a blessing. Huge blessing. Whatever he writes, publish it. Carte blanche. He immediately, everybody knows that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wants everyone to hear what his disciple, Abhay Charanaravinda, is thinking and writing. Well, immediately he's become a confidential disciple. Whatever he writes, publish it. Huge. So that was in February. Now in July, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, just as he came to Allahabad in 33 and at the launch of the Gaudiya Math there that Prabhupada helped start and initiated Abhay as Abhay Charanaravinda. So in 35 in July, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is out touring his missions and he comes to Mumbai, comes to Bombay, still has the old colonial name. Do they still call it Bombay here? People still say Bombay?
It's a Mumbai.
I know, but do they...
For the locals, except for the locals, everyone else, they say Bombay.
Everyone else?
Yeah.
I mean the
outside
local.
Bombay people. Outside Bombay, people say they Bombay.
The local people?
Local people, they don't say, because of political reasons.
Right. But the outsiders?
Yeah, the outsiders.
They come and they say Bombay. The old timers, right? It's hard to change when you get older. Okay. So he came to Bombay, because it was Bombay then, we'll say Bombay. And he was very pleased with what he saw. And he complimented Bhakti Saranga Maharaj, who was the head. Want to read? It was very clean, it was well run, books were being distributed, lots of classes. Prabhupada would come and do his, you know, wonderful singing in the harmonium and mridanga, and you know, he was trying to launch a business, but he was more interested in the mat, you know, that was, he's so devotional. So he now, Bhakti Saranga says, he should be the president. How come he's living outside? So now what did Srila Bhaktisiddhanta say? Read this.
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati replied, it is better that he is living outside your company. He will do. When the time comes, he will do everything himself. You don't have to recommend
him. Uh-huh. Now that reads like a prophecy. Look at that. You don't have to recommend him, because don't forget, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he can see what's coming. He knows what's going to happen to his mission, and he knows that Abhay Charanaravinda is somebody who's capable of reviving the mission. He knows that this person understands the mission. Absolute ascension, thou hast proved, impersonal calamity, thou hast removed. You don't have to recommend it. So, years later, like especially in 1977 in Allahabad, let's see if I have it here, in January, I think it was 13th, Prabhupada was talking about this, because Prabhupada heard that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had said this, he will do everything himself, you don't have to, and he was mystified. What did Guru Maharaj mean? I will do everything myself? And then Prabhupada said, this was his blessing. Otherwise, how could I do any of this? You know, Prabhupada was always amazed by the Hare Krishna movement. That because Prabhupada said, I thought that when I came and told the four rules, you would, all you people would say, oh, Swamiji, please go home. You know? So Prabhupada was always amazed by how people were taking to Krishna consciousness. So this is his blessing. He wanted this, therefore he gave me the blessing to do it. But Prabhupada heard that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had said that, and it was mysterious. And then when it happened, then he thought, yeah, okay, this was his blessing. Okay, so that's the second sweet blessing. The first was whatever he writes, publish it. Second is, you know, he will do. He will do everything. It's better he's outside. He's not going to get, you know, involved in this mess that's going to come. And then in November, that's why I have this look of concern here, Abhay Charanaravinda and his young son, they're on Brajmandal Parikram, And they're at Radhakund. This is Radhakund. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he's confiding in his confidential disciple his concerns. And he's saying things like, you know, we were so happy at Altadanga Junction when we were small. And we had 200 rupees a month, we could pay all the bills. And now we have all these temples, and we have this big marble palace at Bug Bazaar. They moved from Altadanga to Bug Bazaar. And now my leading men, my leading sannyasis, they're fighting over the rooms. Who's going to get the nicest room? Who's going to get the best? They're losing their preaching spirit, and they're just becoming mad after the stones and the bricks. I wish I could take the marble off the walls and sell it and just print books. And he said this too. Here's a heavy, heavy one. He sees what's coming. So, Prabhu, why don't you read this?
Deeply concerned, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said to Abhay,
Agun Jwalbe,
there will be fire. One day there would be fire in the Kolkata Gaudiya Math, and that fire of party interest would spread and destroy.
It's the fire of fighting, of dissension, worse than a physical fire.
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta then said directly to Abhay,
Amaricha
Chila Kichur Bhai Karana. I had a desire to print some books. If you ever get money, print books.
Ah, that's where it comes from. That's why in BBT, Papa would say, I'm following my Guru Maharaj blindly. With eyes wide open, right? And then read this.
Standing by Radhakund and beholding his spiritual master, Abhay felt the words deeply enter his own life. If you ever get money, print books.
Print books. And then distribute books, right? So that's very appropriate for the December Prabhupada Marathon. Okay, so that was very intense. Prabhupada was given a preview of what was coming, and he received an order there. If you ever get money, print books. Now, that was November 35. Fast forward 13 months to December 36. And, yes. Come on in. All right, we'll see you next month. Alright, now there's Abhay Charan Aravinda, 36. Yeah, he's still in Bombay. I think it was a year or two later that he gave up and he went back to Calcutta. Nothing was happening. Krishna wouldn't let him become rich materially then. The handle is turning and the mystery guest is entering, and it is, come in. Come. Alright. Are you going to come for the seminar? Are you going to listen? Do you understand English, Prabhu? Yes. Good. Marathi, nay. Hindi, nay. English, yes. Okay, December 1936. Prabhupada is in Bombay doing business. And he's feeling, you know, he's initiated 3 years ago, 3 years earlier. And he's trying to launch this business. It's not happening. And he feels he wants to do more. He's already done a lot. He's helped start two centers. He's pleased his Guru Maharaj like anything. He met his, you know, he only met his Guru Maharaj 5 or 6 times, he said. But every time he met him, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wanted to confide some things in him. And the Godbrothers would criticize, oh, he's being too familiar with Guru Maharaj. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. That's an old saying, right? So Prabhupada said, yeah, fool I might have been, but what could I do? Guru Maharaj, he wanted to tell me some confidential instructions, so... So he's in Bombay, and he feels a real need for some personal advice, instruction on how he can do more for the mission. Prabhu, do you read English?
Yes.
You want to read this? Can you see if you can read that?
I am a householder, something I give mandatory. Then, while I cannot give you direct service, is there any particular service I can do?
Yeah, we know that Prabhupada wrote this because he told us. He told us. This is what he told us, and it's recorded in this. There were about five appearance day lectures and five disappearance day lectures. Very dramatic. A lot of history in there, a lot of emotion. There's something I can do, something more I can do. So then Prabhupada gave us excerpts of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's reply. He wrote that in early December, and then in December, I think, 13th, he got a reply. Okay, want to read?
Srila Bhakti Siddhartha Saraswati Thakur replied, I am fully confident that you can explain in English our thoughts and arguments to the people. This will do much good to yourself as well as your audience. I have every hope that you can turn yourself into a very good English teacher if you serve the mission to
inculcate
the novel impression of the Lord Chaitanya teaching in the people.
Right. Serve the mission to inculcate. This means to instill, to impress upon the people. So does this sound familiar? 1936, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, yes, you can become a very good English preacher. Spoken word, written word. What did that sound like? We heard something earlier in the lesson. What did he say when he first saw Abhay and his friend Naren?
You're educated.
Huh. Why don't you preach? This is the same thing, only now it's more, he knows him, and he's saying it even more. Now he knows he can actually do it. So, Prabhupada, because he's so sincere and so desirous of pleasing Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and carrying out his order, got this final order right at the end. Because 2 weeks later, at the end of the month, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta left this world. So, and Prabhupada said, I made a cry of grief. You can imagine, it was devastating. And then immediately there was fighting who was going to replace him, and that's just not what Saraswati Thakur wanted. He wanted them to cooperate, to carry on the mission. Prabhupada, he left Bombay a year or two later. He moved his whole family back to Calcutta, and he just decided to just keep manufacturing pharmaceuticals right out of his house. Was it Abhay Charande and Sons? Although the Sons weren't helping very much. So he got a couple of apartments in North Calcutta. And, let's see. Okay, so there it is. Abhay at once recognized this to be the same instruction he had received at their first meeting in 1922. He took it as a confirmation. There was no doubt as to the purpose of his life. Yeah. He had to do that. He had to go to the West and preach. So the Gaudiya Math, you know, it fragmented into individual mutts. There was no longer a collective, cooperative mission. And Prabhupada's friend and godbrother, His Holiness Sridhar Maharaj, and Bhakti Saranga Maharaj, they were in Mayapur, and then they wanted to make a preaching base in Calcutta. So they contacted Prabhupada, Abhay, and said, you know any places? So Prabhupada said, well, I have an extra place here. Why don't you come and I'll rent? I'll give you a very cheap rent, you know, just pay this much rent. Because he knew it was good for him too if he had association. So he got their association. And in 1939, Prabhupada started writing his introduction to Gita Upanishad. He started translating the Gita in English. And he wrote the introduction, first draft, of what became, you know, later on, what we know as the introduction to the Gita. And they're very impressed by his writing. So they decided that they would give him a title. And I think it was Bhakti Saranga wanted to call him Bhakti Siddhanta title. But then it sounded strange to Sridhar Maharaj because their Guru Maharaj, his name was Bhakti Siddhanta. Why not, let's call him Bhakti Vedanta. So they gave him this honorary title, Bhakti Vedanta. Bhakti Vedanta Prabhu. So, Prabhupada, he's really desirous of preaching. The business isn't going well, and the family's not cooperating, you know. So Prabhupada, he decides that here's Prabhupada's response. The Gaudiya Math is at war with itself, all the different factions. And then the whole world goes to war. There's a World War II, it comes in. In 1939 it started. And then America jumped in after it got bombed by the Japanese in 1941. And so in 1944, Prabhupada's response to the war was to start a magazine. So this isn't the first issue. This is later. This is 20th October, 58. But on Vyasa Puja Day, 1944, while working and living with his family in Calcutta, Srila Prabhupada started Back to Godhead magazine in English, offering spiritual solutions to material problems. So it was... that's Prabhupada's response. He wants to preach. And he came out with an issue in February 44, Vyasa Puja Day. And then he couldn't publish another issue for a whole year because the government of India was rationing all the supplies, including paper. So if it took him a whole year to convince the government of India to let him come out with another one. This BTG image is from a much later issue when Srila Prabhupada had developed what they call a masthead, which later became the template for ISKCON's BTG. See, that's very similar to our present-day BTG. The first issue, published on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day in 1944, was just plain print. Have you ever seen the first issue of BTG? It's just print on paper. It's not. There's no visuals or anything. BTG offered the world spiritual solutions to material problems. Okay. After the war, just before India became officially free from British control, this is in 1947 now, after the war, you know, when British... the war kind of kept... You know, the independence movement was getting stronger and stronger, but then the war came, and that kind of was a big distraction. But as we know from Prabhupada, Subhas Chandra Bose, he started the Indian, you know, Revolution Army, and he was collaborating with the Japanese and Hitler. And he had an agreement that if the British were still occupying India, so the Indian soldiers were fighting for the Allies, you know, the British, the Americans and the British. So but Subhas Bose made an agreement that if you capture an Indian soldier, you just send him to me, and then we're having this, you know, Indian Liberation Army, and we're going to fight against, you know, the British Raj with this army. So the British won the war, but they lost India. Basically, that was the end of the British Empire in India. And because the Indians, they were actually keeping the empire together. They were all over the world. They were, you know, guarding the empire. The Sikhs, Prabhupada said, the Sikhs and the Gurkhas. The Sikhs, we know, the Sikhs of the Gurkhas, I think, are the Nepalese, yeah. Okay, so after the war, just before India became officially free from British control, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to his boyhood hero, the leader of the Indian independence movement, Mahatma Gandhi. And so Gandhi wrote this letter in July 1947. 6 months before Gandhi was assassinated, Srila Prabhupada wrote him a letter which now reads like a prophecy. Here are a few excerpts. This is how Prabhupada started the letter. My dear Mahatmaji, I am your unknown friend. Does that sound familiar? It's from the Bhagavatam, actually. There's And the story of King Paramjan, the super soul, is called the unknown friend of everyone. You should therefore take a note of warning from your insignificant friend like me, that unless you retire timely from politics and engage yourself 100% in the preaching work of Bhagavad, which is the real business of the Mahatmas, you shall have to meet with such inglorious death as Mussolini, Hitler, Tojo. He mentions all these World War II characters, you know, who perished in the war. Politics is going to get the better of you if you don't get out. I would only request you to retire from politics at least for 1 month only, and let us have a discussion on the Bhagavad Gita. Because Gandhi was always, you know, citing the Gita as his inspirational book. But Prabhupada wants him to understand the Gita as it is, you know, the real Gita. I am sure, therefore, that you shall get a new light from the result of such discussions, not only for your benefit, but for the benefit of the world at large, as I know that you are sincere, honest, and moralist. Awaiting your early reply with interest, yours sincerely, Abhay Charan Day. Prabhupada's still using his legal name in his business, and he wrote Mahatma Gandhi like this. So that was 12th of July, 1947. On 30th of Jan, 48, about 6 months later, you know, that Hindu extremist, Prabhupada's coming, or Gandhi's coming out of his prayer meeting, and he's assassinated by this Hindu extremist who thought Gandhi was being too soft on Muslims, because Gandhi was always trying to reconcile Hindu-Muslim tension, that the British were losing India, so that was their parting shot, right? He created this bad hate between the Hindus and the Muslims. So Gandhi was shot. The assassination of Mahatma Gandhi sparked the articulation, the expression of Srila Prabhupada's mission. Prabhupada was already trying to involve Gandhi even before, you know, in his mission. Probably Gandhi never read that letter. Probably his secretaries just read it and threw it out or something. But Prabhupada already had the idea that Gandhi is famous, and Gandhi is saying that his book of inspiration is the Gita. Right? So if he's saying that, and now we're getting our independence, then I got an opportunity here through Mahatma Gandhi to make the whole world aware of the Bhagavad Gita. But I got to get Gandhi tuned into the Gita as it is, because Gandhi didn't really understand the Gita. He didn't even believe that Krishna actually ever lived. He was just trying to use the Gita to make a case for nonviolence of all things. I mean, how many people died at Kurukshetra? 640 million. Gandhi's trying to make a case for pacifism out of the Gita. So he didn't believe it was actually an historical conversation. It was just some poetic expression, right? So Prabhupada starts writing letters to the government of India. And he gives a shape, a name actually, to this mission. The mission, he has this order from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. They all had the order. Prabhupada took it seriously. And he's trying to give a name and a form, a shape, to the mission. So he's saying in this one letter, and this is actually an essay that Prabhupada wrote. It's called Conception of Gita Nagari. This is the first name that Prabhupada gave to his mission, the Gita Nagari, the village where the Bhagavad Gita is sung and lived. Quote, the Gita Nagari will properly utilize the huge resources of Mahatma Gandhi Memorial Fund. So Prabhupada, he wrote the deputy PM of India, Dr. Sardar Patel, right under Nehru, and he encouraged Patel. You know, he was saying, look, don't just make a statue to Gandhi where pigeons will pass stool. I can show you how to make a community based on Gandhi's inspirational book, the Bhagavad Gita, and we can have a spiritual revolution. This is the real legacy of India, and Gandhi he liked the Gita, even though he didn't understand the Gita. So in this essay, the Gita Nagari will make use of the huge resources of Mahatma Gandhi Memorial Fund in the manner as will satisfy both Gandhi and the public. Gandhi's memory can be well preserved by his exemplary activities, and not simply by construction of huge buildings or dead stone statues. As we see the general tendency, you know, somebody dies and you make a statue. Mahatma Gandhi was a saintly reformer, and his memorial fund may be utilized for the purpose of converting degraded persons into saintly order. I can show you how to make a whole community based on the Gita. We can start, you know, changing the world. We can start bringing peace to the world through the Gita. He's using Gandhi's name to try to launch his mission. That's what he's doing, Prabhupada's doing. When India's leaders ignored Prabhupada's proposals to fund a spiritual community based on Gandhi's inspirational scripture, Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada decided, okay, they're not listening. So he decided to revive BTG, which he had let go for a while, and began to further articulate his plan to rescue humanity by building spiritual communities based on the Gita's teachings. He was calling his mission the Gita Nagari. He was trying to interest business and government leaders in this idea of a spiritual revolution, a community. They weren't interested. In the next lesson, we'll take a close look at Prabhupada's strategic plan triggered by the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi. So they weren't listening, so Prabhupada decided he would go back to writing articles in BTG and just trying to distribute BTG. He was still doing his pharmaceutical products business, mainly by traveling on the road. He was like a traveling salesman. He would ride the Indian trains. And one time he had an invitation to sell his pharmaceuticals with a doctor who was in a town called Jhansi. Have you heard of Jhansi?
Yep.
Have you heard of this? In UP. Okay? So Prabhupada, while on business in Jhansi in October 1952, Srila Prabhupada met a doctor who invited him to return. So what happened was Prabhupada is with this doctor, and the doctor is seeing patients, and he's prescribing remedies. And then next to him is a bhai with a remedy, with the pharmaceuticals. So the doctor said he noticed that Abhay Babu, he was not only selling the pharmaceuticals, but he was preaching to the patients. He was so on fire with Krishna, you know, he was just a preacher. So the doctor said to him, Abhay Babu, I can see, you know, you're a very spiritual person. Why don't you come back to Jhansi sometime? And you don't have to do business. Why don't you, I know a lot of students at the local Ayurvedic medical college here in Jhansi, and they like Vedic stuff. And I think they'd be interested in what you're talking, because you're talking about the Vedas. You're talking about Bhagavad Gita, and there's a lot of students here. I think they'd like to hear you. So Prabhupada took him up on it. So he went back to Jhansi. And one of the students was really interested. His name was Prabhakar Mishra. He became his first disciple, actually. With the help of a student who later would become his first disciple, by the name Acharya Prabhakar, Prabhupada gained access to a landed estate. Acharya Prabhakar was living on this property because it was abandoned. Nobody was living there. And it was a place called the Radha Memorial. Some wealthy guy had, just like the Taj Mahal is a memorial to somebody's wife, right? Muslim. So somebody had made a memorial to his wife, the Radha Memorial, and it was a big property and there were buildings, but it wasn't being used. So Acharya Prabhakar was living there, who heard Abhay Babu speak. He was impressed by Prabhupada speaking. And he said, you know, I think the executor of this estate, I think he's interested in spiritual people. I think he'd let you use this property and these buildings for your preaching. So would you like me to introduce him to you? And so Prabhupada said, yeah, sure. So he introduced Prabhupada to this man, And the man liked Prabhupada and said, yes, for now, why don't you just use this as a base? There's nobody, it's not being used. And there was even a hint that if Prabhupada, you know, got a following, that maybe the executor would just deed the property to Prabhupada, would just turn it over, you know. It was kind of a hint of a gift there. So with the estate executor's permission, Prabhupada transferred the property, or transformed the property into the League of
Devotees.
Yeah, he started, that was the second name he gave to his mission. The first name was the Gita Nagari. And now, see, league was a popular phrase. There were different leagues. There was a Muslim league and this league and that league. So Prabhupada decided he's going to call his organization the League of Devotees. And he canvassed for his mission among the student community. And so he put an ad in the local paper in Jhansi. Wanted candidates from any nationality to qualify themselves as real Brahmins for preaching the teachings of Bhagavad Gita for all practical purposes throughout the whole world. Prabhupada never thought small, right? He doesn't. Throughout the whole world. You know, later Hari Shari came across some League of Devotee literature. And he asked Prabhupada, what was this League of Devotees? So Prabhupada laughed. He said, oh, it was just me. It was a one-man show. But he would say things like it was a worldwide movement, you know, because that was how Prabhupada thought. You know. That's what he did in 26 Second Avenue, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, right? There's a little hole in the wall in New York City. But Prabhupada had that vision. Deserving candidates will be provided with free boarding and lodging. He just trusted Krishna would send the funds, right? Apply A.C. Bhaktivedanta, founder and secretary of the League of Devotees, Bharati Bhavan, P.O. Jhansi, U.P. So in May 1953, Prabhupada formally launched the League of Devotees, and this is the launch. This is May 16th. And let's see, why don't you read Vanamali Prabhu?
To propagate spiritual knowledge systematically for checking the imbalance of life, the whole race of India and the world over, with a view to educate people in general in the techniques of
this is from what's called a prospectus. When you launch something and you want to attract investors in what you're doing, you make a prospectus. So Prabhupada is encouraging participation, investment in the League of Devotees. And there he is. He had a whole day of kirtan and bhajan and speeches. And there he is giving the keynote speech at night. Later in the day. And this was from the prospectus. This is the first purpose of the League of Devotees. And later on, in the next lesson, tomorrow night, we're going to see his ISKCON branch. And this is a complete echo of what became the first purpose of ISKCON. If you know the purposes of ISKCON, it's all about education. And so Prabhupada is saying this, you know, way back in 1953. It's about educating people. So, on May 16th, 1953, Abai held a grand opening celebration for the League of Devotees with continuous readings, kirtan, and prasadam distribution from early morning until night. The buildings were decorated with leaves, flowers, and many earthen water pots. In the evening, when attendance was the greatest, Abai lectured from the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita on Raja Guhya Yoga. What do we know that as? The most confidential knowledge, Raja Guhya Yoga. Prabhakar Mishra conducted a fire sacrifice and several brahmanas chanted mantras from Brahma Sangita, like you do here. Guests received a 16-page prospectus containing Abhay's essay on the need for the League and an excerpt from the charter explaining its goals. It was signed Om Tat Sat Abhay Charanaravindo, the Bengali spelling, Bhaktivedanta founder and secretary. All right. Now, that was the launch. But as the year went on in 1953, then some political intrigue ensued. What happened was that the League's land and buildings, originally a gift promise, turned into a purchase offer. What happened was the executor who's, you know, holding the property. Prabhupada, among his listeners, was a lady who liked Prabhupada's preaching. But then she also became part of another organization called Mahila Samiti Sangha. The wife of the governor of UP, Mr. K. Munshi, his wife, Lilavati Munshi, she was trying to start an organization to help the condition of women in India. And that's a big issue to this day. In India, right? The plight, the lot of women abused, neglected, and all this stuff, you know. And so she wanted to start this Mahila. She had started a Mahila Samiti Sangha. And this lady who had been listening to Prabhupada just more went over with her organization. And she knew that, you know, Abhay Babu was using these buildings and this property but didn't own it. So she said, I think there's a nice property we could use for our Mahila Samiti Sangha right here in Jhansi. So Lilavati Munshi, the governor's wife, starts putting pressure on the executor to sell to them and to get rid of this sadhu, you know, this bubble. And she even writes Prabhupada a letter asking him to please vacate the premises. And Prabhupada's, no way, I'm here and I'm preaching, and Prabhupada, this is, you know, he's got something going on in three dimensions. This is more than Back to Godhead magazine. This is people are listening to him, and he's got buildings and property, and the executor has hinted that maybe he'd give it to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada is, I'm not leaving. So then the lady goes back to the executor, and she puts pressure on him. She said, you know, you have these business licenses. He has this. The way this guy's making his money, he owns two movie theaters in town, cinema houses. And Mrs. Munshi says, you know, if you don't sell to us, it's going to be very difficult for you to renew your license with these theaters. She's making politics. So then the executor goes to Prabhupada and said, I'm sorry, Abhay Babu, but if you want to stay here, you will have to buy the property. So he quotes a big high price. He knew that there's no way that Prabhupada could afford that. So Prabhupada's in the middle of all this, and he's thinking, what should I do? You know, I got something going on here. I think I have to fight this. But I don't know if it's worth it. So Prabhupada contacts his godbrother, a trusted godbrother, from the Gaudiya Mutt, the former Gaudiya Mission, which he has his own mutt in Mathura. It's Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj, who later became Prabhupada's sannyas guru. They were close friends. So he said, Maharaj, will you please come to Jhansi and maybe bring a couple of brahmachari assistants? And would you come here? I want you to check out the scene here. I want you to survey the scene and give me your frank opinion, what you think, what I should do. If I should, you know, because I'm getting advice, Prabhupada told him, that attorneys, friends here are telling me that you were here first, and India has a long tradition of giving preference to sadhu, so you can fight this. You don't have to, you know, cave into this political pressure. But he wasn't sure. So Bhakti Pragyan Maharaj came, and after a couple of days, he turned to Abhay and said, you know, Abhay Babu, Bhaktivedanta Prabhu, Guru Maharaj, he always wanted us to preach in the big cities where a lot of people were. This Jhansi, it's kind of out of the way. It's a dusty, we say in America, a one-horse town. It's not worth it. You're not in the Vanaprastha ashram. Then Prabhupada is basically Vanaprastha. You're not a Vanaprastha. You didn't take Vanaprastha to engage in litigation over this place. I think Lord Chaitanya has more bigger and better things in mind for you. For now, why don't you just drop this and come with me to Mathura. So Prabhupada did that. Now before Prabhupada did that, before he called in Keshav Maharaj, when that executor quoted this big high price, you know, to buy the land, Prabhupada thought, well, if that's what it is, I know how to make money if I want to, because he wasn't so inspired at this point because his family was not helping him and they were just useless, really. But he did go back to Calcutta at one point in 1953 to try to raise the funds to buy the place through cranking up his, you know, pharmaceutical works, and he's going to just make a lot of money selling pharmaceuticals and take the cash. But when Prabhupada went back to Calcutta, famous incident. Okay? And look at this, is a perfect painting. There's Radharani Day. You know. Even back in Allahabad in Prayag, you know, Prabhupada wanted to have programs. He did have programs. But she wasn't interested. She'd always take the kids, you know, in the back room and then hide. You know, she didn't want any part of it. Prabhupada said she was a pious lady, but she was not interested in preaching. And I wanted to preach. And she was a very shy, you know, retiring pious lady. And she would just... So Prabhupada goes home. And... Prabhupada says, he told us, he said, quote, I wanted as much as possible to get her to work with me in spreading Krishna consciousness, to get her help. But she was very determined. She would not help me spread Krishna consciousness. And she was very attached to drinking tea. She was hooked on the British tea. Chai, you know. I was always telling her not to drink tea because I wanted to have a nice Vaishnava family. And then Vaishnavas don't even take tea if it's got caffeine in it, right? So although I was repeatedly telling her, this time I finally said, all right, you have to choose, see, between me or tea. Either the tea goes or I go. So she replied, give up tea drinking or give up my husband? Well, I will have to give up my husband then. She thought he was joking. It was just like, you know, husband and wife fighting, joking like that. Of course, Prabhupada said, of course she thought I was joking. So, okay, we're going to have a lady read this. Why don't you read this?
Rainabai was out. His wife took his worshipable Bhagavatam to the market and traded it for tea biscuits. At first he felt interest, but then a wave of absolute resolution passed over him. His family life was changed.
I mean, can you imagine how unconscious? I mean, she just... So Prabhupada is, you know, he's out, and then he comes back and looks for his Bhagavatam. She had taken it to the shop. Because it's a heavy book. You can get a lot of tea biscuits, you know, for a book. They put it on the scale and they give you, you know. So this was like, we say, do you say in India, this was the straw that broke the camel's back? You say that? The last straw. So what does Prabhupada do? He turns on his heels, he walks out. And they thought, oh, he'll be back. He's always coming and going, you know. He never came back. Never. When we were doing the interviews for the Lilamrita, a godbrother, Paramhans Maharaj, in South Calcutta, said, so Bhaktivedanta Prabhu, he came to my mutt. And for 2 weeks, he just paced up and down the mutt, chanting at the top of his voice, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. You know, he was just chanting japa, just releasing, what was it, 1918, 1954, 36 years of grihastha life. He just, Prabhupada said, even I had one daughter, she still wasn't married. My wife is threatening suicide if I didn't get her married. Prabhupada actually did arrange a marriage, but they didn't accept it. But then this happened, and Prabhupada said, enough is enough. God will take care. I'm finished with this, these people, you know. So Prabhupada left. And he went back to Jhansi, and then he lost, and then he that's when he contacted his godbrother. He said, please come. So then his godbrother, Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj, said, look, just come with me to Mathura for now, drop this. Because Prabhupada didn't, he lost Jhansi, he left his family, didn't have any money, so he comes to Mathura. And then he starts, somehow he gets a little money, he starts publishing BTG again. With great difficulty, hardly had any money. And he's trying to help some of the Gaudiya Mutts that are still surviving, some of the individual temples. And he starts telling them, his godbrothers, who are in charge of these mutts, that ever since the 1940s, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta has been coming to him in dreams and telling him to take sannyas. And Prabhupada told us, I was horrified, because I didn't think I could live as austerely as these Gaudiya Mutt sannyasis. You know, he saw how Bhakti Saranga Maharaj and Sridhar Maharaj were living. He thought it was too austere for him. So, but he started telling them, Guru Maharaj wants me to take sannyas. I just left my family. I think it's time. But they wouldn't give him sannyas. They, well, first you help us with the mutt, and we'll see how you do. And he did. He tried to help them. But he was too much for them. He was his preaching spirit. He was on fire with the preaching. You know, he was always trying to expand what they were doing, and they weren't interested in that. They just wanted to maintain, you know, their little scene. And then they'd always let him go. Oh, you're too much for us. You're a favorite son of Guru Maharaj. Better you go on your own. But then he finally came back to Keshav Maharaj's place. And he told about the dream. And immediately, Keshav Maharaj said, Bhaktivedanta Prabhu, you must do it. You must take sannyas. So, on September 17th, 1959, I don't know if it was Prabhupada or somebody brought the press there because they made it a news event. And there's Prabhupada at the age of 63, taking sannyas. To go into the world. He's telling everybody at this point, I'm going to the West. I'm going to, you know, Guru Maharaj wanted this, well, I'm going to. And there is a fellow named Bhaktivedanta Muni Maharaj, who's in his 90s, and he's preparing to leave the world. But Prabhupada is preparing to go into the world as a sannyasi, and there's Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj. Now, that was in 59. 9 years later, in Seattle, after Prabhupada had started ISKCON, Prabhupada is in Seattle and he's preaching, encouraging the devotees in Seattle. And you've heard of Seattle? Seattle, this is where Microsoft is headquartered, northwest side of America. And then Prabhupada gets word that his sannyas guru has passed away. So he starts glorifying his sannyas guru. And he has all the devotees sign a letter of condolence. You can hear at the end of the recording, everybody's signing this. And then you hear Prabhupada signing his heavy, you know, his big letters, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. And what you're going to hear now is a little excerpt from the eulogy that he's giving his Guru Maharaj. And it's very emotional. Prabhupada is describing how he's giving all credit to Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj for him taking sannyas. Even though he's already had dreams and he's been asking people. In this context, you're going to hear Prabhupada say things that he wouldn't ordinarily say. But he's saying it in the mood of glorifying Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj. So here we go.
Bhaktivedanta, Prabhu,
So what did Prabhupada say there that he wouldn't ordinarily say? I mean, first of all, he's giving all credit to his Guru Maharaj and Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj for taking sannyas, although he'd been asking for it already. But also, look at this. Prabhupada, he never says this. Without accepting the renounced order of life, no one can become a preacher. Rather, he says the opposite. You can preach in any ashram. Grihe tako, vane tako, sada hari bole tako. Prabhupada always encouraged anybody from any position in life to preach. But the context is he's trying to glorify his Guru Maharaj and Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj. So he's talking like this. So he takes sannyas. And he's still writing, he's still doing BTG. But Prabhupada said, shortly after sannyas, he heard from two people. One was a librarian, and one was an army captain. And they both said the same thing. And the second time he heard it, he took it that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta must be trying to tell him something. And what they said was, you know, you're doing this BTG, but people, they easily throw away magazines. Why don't you write books? People don't so easily throw away books. So Prabhupada started thinking. And then it must have crossed his mind too that before Srila Bhakti Siddhanta would send those preachers to Europe in the 1930s, he insisted they have a book, that Sri Krishna Chaitanya. So Prabhupada, he's saying he's going to the West, but he's saying, he's thinking, I've got to have a book. So he hit on the idea of his magnum opus, his great work, would be translating the Srimad Bhagavatam in English. But before he started that project, he wrote a little book, which was what? You know?
Japanese...
No, not Light of the Bhagavat. That's something else. That was another project that happened.
Krishna?
Krishna? The Supreme Personality of God? No. No, before he wrote the Bhagavatam. He didn't write that. That book's from Bhaktisiddhanta. He saw an item in the paper in 1959 that Russian scientists, everybody's looking at Russian scientists because in 57 they put up Sputnik, the first man-made satellite. You know, the first. No. So Prabhupada, he sees that in the paper it said that Russian scientists have discovered antimatter. So Prabhupada runs with this. He starts presenting in scientific jargon what antimatter really is. It's spirit. So it's just the second chapter of the Gita, basically, you know, texts, what, 11 through 30. You got this gyan, distinguishing spirit from matter. And he's calling the soul the antimaterial particle. And he's calling the kingdom of God the antimaterial planetary systems. And that's the first book that many devotees read, first book I read. It's fascinating. It's a great example of how to preach in a different, in a certain context. You know, you just adapt the language. It's the first book our late great Sariputta Prabhu wrote, our scientist, or he read. He read Easy Journey. So Prabhupada read it, and before he published Easy Journey, he serialized it in BTG. He put it in BTG in two parts, and then he sent it around to different scientists and got favorable reviews, and then he finally published it as a book with favorable reviews right on the cover, you know, inside too, right, inside. And that was very shrewd, that was very smart to do. So that was his first book, Easy Journey to Other Planets, and then he's living in Delhi, and he starts writing the Bhagavatam. And then he goes to Vrindavan for inspiration. Right? And on one of his trips to Vrindavan, he goes to the Radha Damodar temple. And at the invitation of Gaurachan Goswami, who's the Mahant, the head of the temple there, Prabhupada, Gaurachan Goswami said, oh, you're translating the Bhagavatam? well, why don't you come and live in Vrindavan? This is the place for inspiration to translate the Bhagavatam. And you know, I've got some rooms here that need fixing up. They need renovation. So if you can get some funds to renovate those rooms, I'll let you stay there in the rooms. Just some, you know, token fee, token rent. So Prabhupada did. He was able to raise 5,000 rupees to fix up these rooms. And it was two rooms, and Prabhupada paid 5 rupees a month rent. And then he'd go into Delhi. It was just the opposite. He reversed it. He was living in Delhi and going to Vrindavan. Now he's living in Vrindavan. And he'd go to Delhi to print with great difficulty, getting donations and you know, carrying the paper. And it was, you know, he had no money hardly. He was living very austerely. But between 1962 and 1964, he published 3 volumes, those Indian Bhagavatams, brick-colored. Have you ever seen them? They're very antique, vintage Bhagavatams. So, and here's the kind of typewriter that Prabhupada is using. This is an antique, a Corona typewriter. And to type on this type, you've got to mash your fingers on the keys. There's no question of touch typing. You know, you really got. We have one of these Coronas in the Honolulu, Hawaii temple where I lived for 10 years. And it's wicked. I mean, you really got to, you know, to hit it. So there is Prabhupada. After he printed 3 volumes, he had a picture taken for the paper before he leaves for the West. And right in the preface to the original Indian Bhagavatam edition, Prabhupada is talking about, he's begging the reader to overlook his English, because he knows he doesn't speak the king's English, you know, Pukka English. He knows he speaks Binglish, you know, Bengali English, right? So he's begging the reader to overlook his English and just focus on the message, the spiritual techniques. Don't get hung up on the language. Just tune into the spiritual technology here that I'm trying to reveal in Parampara. So, Vandamali Prabhu, why don't you read this excerpt from the preface?
Our capacity of presenting the matter in adequate,
sufficient language.
Especially in foreign language, will certainly fail, and there may be. So many literary pretenses, in spite of our honest attempt to present it in the proper way, but we are sure that with our own faults in this connection.
Okay, now you read it properly. You read it the way Prabhupada wrote it. Well, we are sure that with our all faults in this connection. Is that proper English? How would a native English? All our faults, or all our faults, with all our faults, yeah, with all our faults. Prabhupada is letting his native Bengali grammar is interfering with his English there, with our all faults. Like Prabhupada would say, our this Krishna consciousness movement. You know, we wouldn't say that in English. So when I have a native English speaking person read this, you know, when I'm presenting in different places, they never read it the way Prabhupada wrote it, because that just doesn't make. They just naturally read it the way they would write it. You know, it's funny, but because your mother tongue is Hindi,
Tamil.
Okay, so there you go. It's another right. So you read it the way Prabhupada wrote it. You read it because your mother tongue is an Indian language. So with our all faults in this connection.
The seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of the society will still accept this on account of its being an honest attempt for glorifying the Almighty, great, so much now magnified.
Right, right. And Prabhupada even gave the example in the preface that if you're in a movie theater and you don't speak the language of the people, and there's a fire, and you start yelling fire in your language, they'll get it. They'll get the idea because of the urgency of how you're expressing yourself. So he's encouraging the reader, look, just get the urgency, the importance of the message, and if you see something, although Prabhupada's English is pretty poetic, it's pretty nice. You know, they called him Kavi, and you see all that poem Prabhupada wrote. Prabhupada, he was, and you'll see other poems Prabhupada wrote in English. He was a poet, definitely. But once in a while, you know, his mother tongue creeps in, and you see there's something technically not right there. Yeah. And there's Prabhupada, the original book distributor in ISKCON. It's very fitting. This is him distributing his three volumes. And who is he showing there? Right. It's Shastri. The second, after Nehru died, Shastri came in for a couple of years. And then Shastri, he died kind of mysteriously. He was in, I think, Kazakhstan when he died.
Tashkent.
Yeah. Tashkent is in Kazakhstan? No, that's
in the USSR, Russia.
Right, but that's, I forget the stan, I think it was Uzbekistan, yeah. Right. So, some people think that he was, you know, assassinated or something. Anyway, but he was an actual pundit. They called Nehru Pundit Nehru. He didn't know anything about the Gita. He went to America once and the Harvard students were asking him about the Gita. He couldn't quote one shloka. Just because he wore a Nehru hat, and you know, they called him Pundit Nehru. But he was actually a pundit. Shastri could appreciate what Prabhupada had done, so he's very happily accepting the books.
He wasn't called a pundit because of his clothes. He was called that because he belonged to Kashmiri Pandit family.
Okay, there you go. By birth, right?
Yes, by birth.
Yeah. Right. Thank you. That was good. So there's Shastri. He's very happy to get the books at the Government House in New Delhi. And it's 65, and Prabhupada's getting ready to go. And let's see here. And then he's openly saying, "You know, I'm going to go to America. I don't know how. I don't know when, but I'm going." And so one person, Mr. Agarwal, said, "Oh, well, I have a son, Gopal, in Pennsylvania. He'll sponsor you." And so Prabhupada said, "Yes, yes." He didn't believe it was going to happen because he heard this before, right? Somebody says, but then nothing ever happens. But then Gopal dutifully sent the papers, you know, for sponsorship. And then Prabhupada got them and said, "Okay." Just after the books were done, Krista opens up the gate and Prabhupada starts getting a passport, visa, and then of course he has to convince Subhati Morarji to send him for free on the Scindia steamship. And you know, she was afraid that he was going to die, and he almost did. You know, he had two heart attacks for good reason. And then in Bombay, right in Bombay, Prabhupada said, "There was one last snag. I couldn't get a P form saying that I didn't have any debts or taxes or something." Because the clerk said, "Swamiji, you're very elderly and I see you only have a private sponsor here. You need an institutional sponsor. What if something happens and you can't get back?" Or, you know. So Prabhupada said, "No, this is not right. Take this to your superior." So Prabhupada said, "I waited all day, you know, in this place." And finally, at the end of the day, the supervisor comes out with the papers. "Don't worry, Swamiji, I've passed your case." Joy. So then now, in 1976, Prabhupada's on a morning walk, and he's telling the devotees on this morning walk in Mayapur how sometimes he was dreaming that he's come to America. And it's very touching. Listen to how Prabhupada is saying this.
Japan or that place, which was cheaper, and I was
Now, it's significant that Prabhupada was dreaming he was going to New York, because where did his Guru Maharaj send the Gaudiya Math preachers? Was to Europe. Prabhupada said generally they go to London. But Prabhupada is very up to date. He's writing his BTG, and yeah, he knows where the action is. He's up with the times. So he knows that the energy is now in America. And he didn't necessarily know about the counterculture, but sure enough, that's what was going on. The action was in America. So Prabhupada was dreaming he's come to New York, although he didn't know anything about New York, and he'd never even seen snow before, you know. And then the first time he saw snow, he said, I woke up and I saw the building was all white. I thought somebody had whitewashed the building. Poor Prabhupada, he had to go through that first winter. Okay, so he finally convinces Sumati Maharaji, you know, to send him. He gets everything, and then, you know, this past year they had this big thing in Calcutta, Friday the 13th, August 1965. Prabhupada puts out to sea from Calcutta. So what we do is we end the lesson with a beautiful song that a god sister of mine wrote about Prabhupada crossing the Atlantic. It's called O Atlantic. And you're going to hear her singing, and you're going to see some slides, some paintings of Prabhupada. And it's very moving, it's very touching, and it's describing the whole, you know, drama of Prabhupada coming to America. So let's listen to my god sister Jamini Devi Dasi sing O Atlantic. Yeah.
Rowing crew. Roll all the incarnations, Mr. Yama.
Jimini. Ah, that's my favorite ending to a lesson. Yeah. So, by the end of the lesson, students will be able to identify the seeding and sprouting of Prabhupada's mission's creeper. We'll be able to tell the three major blessings Prabhupada received from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in 1935. What were the blessings? Do you remember?
Publish whatever he writes.
Right.
No need to recommend him.
He will do everything.
Everything alone.
And
whenever you get some money, print books.
Yes. Yes. There will be fire. He tells them what's going to happen to the Gaudiya mission. And if you ever get money, print books. We'll be able to recount early manifestations of Prabhupada's mission in the 1940s, Kitanagari, 50s, League of Devotees, and 60s, well, it's going to become, you're going to see in the next lesson, it's going to become ISKCON. Manifestations in the 60s, well, Prabhupada's his mission, he poured all of his mission into that. The first canto, Prabhupada said, I put everything in the first canto because he didn't know how much longer he'd live. So he just packed as much as he could in that first canto. And said, even in the first purport to the first verse, that's a long purport to 111. So that's really a rich, chock full of realization and information. We'll be able to describe Prabhupada's sea voyage to the West. We didn't talk about that so much, but as you know, they went to Ceylon, Sri Lanka, and then they went down to Cape Comorin, Kanyakumari, and then they went up to Cochin. They got the books. They had a ceremony, I think, in October for that too, Bhakti Vinod Maharaj. And then it got really rough in the Red Sea. That's where Prabhupada had heart attacks, and he was got seasick. Anybody, you ever get seasick? Oh God, it's the worst feeling. I was seasick once. It's like ultimate nausea. You want to die. You're so nauseous, you just want to die. You know. Anyway, yeah, it got really bad. There's a book called The Jaladutta Diary, Prabhupada keeping a diary of the journey. And there's no entries for about 10 days because Prabhupada was too sick. And then he finally comes back and he describes a little bit what happened. And then the ship got into the Mediterranean, and then it went, by the time it emerged from Gibraltar onto the Atlantic, an amazing thing happened. The Atlantic is a pretty ferocious ocean. It's very stormy, and it became very calm. And the Captain Arun Pandya and his wife, they said, oh, Swamiji, we've never seen the Atlantic like this. And it was that way all across the Atlantic. It was like a lake. We've never seen this. You must come back with us. He was convinced it was because his holy man's aboard that it became like a smooth lake. And Prabhupada sold the second Bhagavatam set. First was to Shastri, it was a gift, and then he sold, the captain gave him a $20 donation for the so he's distributing the Bhagavatams. And he had a round trip ticket too. He could have come back. And when it got really rough in the winter, he'd go back down to the dock and he'd see when's the Jaladutta going back. You know. But luckily he didn't do that. He just stayed. You know, and he did come back to India, but he flew when he had that, you know, stroke and heart attack. And that's how he got better in 67. He came back to India, flying back. So, you're going to keep coming tomorrow night?
Yes.
Can you come? Okay, you might be busy preaching or... Yes. Yeah, it's a very busy time, I understand. Okay, anyway, I'll entice you. Please come, because the first thing we're going to do is we're going to see an 11-minute video of it's called, this is the poem that Prabhupada wrote. When he landed in Boston, the ship came across and finally landed in Boston Harbor. See, there's New York. See how, this is all the northeast side of America. It's very cold up there. This is the west coast. You know, this is Los Angeles and all that stuff. But the ship came all the way across after 35 days and landed in Boston Harbor. And on the ship, Prabhupada wrote this poem, Markine Bhagavat Dharma, Teaching Krishna Consciousness in America. And a godbrother of mine sang it for Prabhupada, and Prabhupada liked it later on. He put it to music. And so you're going to hear my godbrother singing the Prabhupada's poem. And then you're going to be seeing highlights of Prabhupada's preaching leela in moving slides. And you're going to see the English translation for each Bengali stanza. It's beautiful, 11-minute. It was put together by a UK Indian devotee, they call it Pandava Sain, the second generation UK Indian youth. And as a Vyasa Puja, multimedia Vyasa Puja offering for Prabhupada back in 2008 or 9. It's brilliant. So that's 11 minutes. So that's how we start. We start with the transition presentation from Prabhupada leaving, you know, going across the ocean and then landing and writing this poem. And then we start, after we see that, then we're going to go into lesson 5, how his roots manifest as a branch of the Gaudiya Sampradaya called ISKCON. How he started ISKCON. ISKCON branch. And so there's the famous tree. Anybody been to America? If you ever go to America, if you ever go to New York, you have to go to this tree. This is where Prabhupada started preaching outdoors after he, you know, took his disciples. There's Kirtanananda, this is Brahmananda, Hayagriva Brahmananda. You know, so Prabhupada started his outdoor preaching by this tree in Tompkins Square Park. And here's the tree today. A little bigger, a little fatter. And the Vaishnavis hugging the tree. There's even a little sign up here, this part of the tree today. It says, Hare Krishna tree. And then there's a fence over here. It's a big plaque and says, this is the tree where A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami started the Hare Krishna movement. The New Yorkers are very proud that Prabhupada started the movement in New York. Because only in New York could the devotees fit right in, because New York is so insane. You know, New Yorkers pride themselves on, no matter how strange it looks, they just take it in stride. And we've seen it all, you know. They don't blink. Oh yeah? But they blinked quite a bit when they saw Prabhupada. So we're going to see the ISKCON branch. We're going to see the plan that Prabhupada had cooked up, that thing that he was cooking up in the 40s that he called the Gita Nagari. He had a strategic plan of how he's going to manifest his mission in phases. So you're going to see how Prabhupada did that when he started ISKCON. Okay. It's almost 9. Do you have any questions or comments?
I have something to say, but it's not a question. Hmm. About that place over there. I read somewhere that when before Srila Prabhupada went to start his movement in this park, some of those trees were suffering from a strange disease. They were all about to wilt. And hearing the transcendental vibrations of Hare Krishna Mahamantra, they all got revived. And the scientists were very...
I never heard that one, but you hear so many stories. But I wouldn't be surprised, because you know what these trees are. If you go to this park, on the plaque, which is right here on a fence now, the former mayor of New York, the last mayor, Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, he says this is the Hare Krishna tree, and then he starts talking about the trees. He said this is one of many American elm trees. This is one of the finest collections of American elm trees in America. Now, elm trees, especially Dutch elm, American elm too, they're very prone to this disease. So, I never heard that story before.
Scientists have said that. I really can't recollect
Okay, I'd love to hear the source of that, because I never heard that story. I hear so many stories.
I'll get back to you
Okay.
Yeah. The scientists have proved, you know, the trees got revived, and they were quite surprised how this is wilting.
This is also consistent with Prabhupada said Jagadish Chandra Bose, you know, he actually invented the radio before Marconi, but then anyway, the Italians stole it, the idea or something. And he also proved that plants respond to sound with different kinds of sound. He subjected the plants to, you know, and some sound they wilt, and some sound they thrive, you know. So that makes sense. It's consistent with, you know, those kinds of experiments being done. Yeah, this is a funny... This is from the East Village Other. It's underground newspaper. They did a story on Prabhupada, and this is one of the famous pictures they took. And the people would see that picture, and they'd say, yeah, man, he's so high, he got to hold his head to keep him flying away. Yeah, Prabhupada. He's just a transcendental personality. Amazing, even the New Yorkers. Okay, so please come tomorrow night and, you know, to spread the word that these are nice lessons, and if anybody wants to come, they're more than welcome, even though it's the marathon, if they're not busy. And I hope you can come. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.